Our guest today at the UN Brief is Professor De Schutter. He is the Special Rapporteur for the UN Human Rights Council. October, you presented at the opening of the UN General Assembly in New York your mission report on poverty in the EU. What were your preliminary findings from this mission? Who did you meet and what were some of your observations and recommendations?
Thank you. Well, indeed, I had the pleasure of doing a 2 months long mission to the EU in my role as Special Rapporteur on Extreme Poverty and Human Rights to understand why the EU is not doing better in reducing poverty and inequalities across the 27 member states of the EU. And my meetings were extremely interesting with different parts of the European Commission, with Minister Pascal Donoghue, who is the president of Eurogroup as Minister of Finance of Ireland, with officials from the European Investment Bank and the European Central Bank, amongst others. I also met with representatives of the Portuguese presidency of the EU and representatives from other member states. And my essential findings are that the EU is not very well equipped to support the member states' efforts to combat poverty, particularly for 3 reasons. First, because member states are still competing through taxation schemes to attract investors, and there is a race to the bottom in the field of taxation as a result of a lack of harmonization, particularly for corporate income taxes across the EU. That is what we call fiscal dumping. And of course, it's a major obstacle for states to be able to collect public revenue to finance public services and social protection schemes. Secondly, states still compete with one another with respect to wages and to social contributions paid by employers to finance social security. And unfortunately, there again, there is little the EU can do to harmonize across the EU the benefits going to workers, resulting in a situation in which all member states end up losing since they do not dare to raise wages and to increase the levels of contributions employers pay because they fear that the companies under their jurisdiction will be less competitive. Now, the European Commission did propose a harmonized methodology to define the statutory minimum wage across the EU. It made this proposal in October 2020, but that is only a very small part of a broader problem of social dumping in the EU. Thirdly and finally, the member states of the EU are forced to comply with certain very strong budgetary disciplines under what is called the Stability and Growth Pact, adopted in 1997, that basically prohibits member states from having a large public deficit and having a large public debt. And although the rules have been relaxed during the COVID-19 pandemic to allow member states to react to the pandemic, it still is a rule that constrains member states and makes it difficult for them to have generous social protection schemes inter alia in times of crisis. And so these are some issues which I think we can find ways to address with some imagination, some political imagination, and more political will than there is for the moment in the EU.
This coming June, at the next session of the Human Rights Council, you are going to propose the creation of a global fund to finance social protection systems to face future shocks to the global economy, such as the COVID-19 crisis. In the last 6 months, consultations have taken place. In June, you will present the final report to the Human Rights Council and take stock of the idea of the creation of a global fund for social protection. What emerged in the consultations in the past 6 months, and which country members are supporting the idea at this time? Are there other UN agencies involved in this process, such as the International Labour Organization and the World Health Organization? Is this proposition something akin to the universal basic income? How so?
Thank you. Yes, the idea of a global fund for social protection is an idea that the time of which has come. It's not an entirely new idea. Already in 2011, the advisory group on social protection floors that was chaired by Michel Bachelet for the International Labour Organization had proposed a stronger international cooperation to support countries to allow them to establish social protection floors and make social protection floors universal. And repeatedly since that date, countries have pledged to support each other in order to move towards universal social protection floors. The idea basically is that all individuals, men, women, and children, should have basic income security throughout their lives, from cradle to grave, from child allowances and old age pension to unemployment benefits, disability allowances, and healthcare throughout people's lives. Now, there is today a very strong momentum for supporting low-income countries who have a very high financing gap, making it difficult for them to finance social protection floors for all of their population, although this is actually something that is affordable with some international solidarity. In fact, the ILO, which is a very strong ally in this campaign for the Global Fund, has calculated that it would require no more than $78 billion per year to compensate for the financing gap that low-income countries today experience, allowing them to cover all their populations with all these benefits, protecting income security throughout people's lives. $78 billion is not that huge. It's about half the total amount of official development assistance that OECD countries have provided to developing countries in the year 2019. So it's a matter of political will. There is enough money out there to support this effort, and especially social protection is a very good investment for future inclusive growth, and it can, in time, be self-financed because of all the multiplier effects that result from better protecting income security for people. And yes, there is lots of support behind the idea. Some states do fear that providing such kind of support by a global fund will lead to impose conditionalities on the beneficiary countries. And as we know, conditionalities in international aid have a very bad reputation. But in the case of the Global Fund, the only conditionality that would be imposed is for countries to set up robust standing social protection floors that provide individuals with entitlements allowing them to claim certain benefits from the state. And that is not a conditionality that imposes macroeconomic constraints. Instead, it is a conditionality that encourages states to put social protection at the top of their political priorities. And I believe it is something very much desirable for development to be really sustainable and for growth to be more inclusive in the future.
So this is not a universal basic income necessarily you are talking about. You're really talking about helping developing countries, low-income countries, to actually just work through a system that they can be self-sufficient, that they can provide these basic floors of social protection as unemployment, as pension, as supporting children, school-age children. Is more akin to that than actually universal basic income ideas that have been floated around, even in developed countries. As you know, in California, venture capitalists now are talking about that it will be necessary a universal basic income because they see that the changes in the economy, in the digital economy, will create temporary displacement of workers. So it's really more looking at the whole spectrum of possibilities in terms of social protection, you'd say.
There is a definition of social protection floors in a recommendation adopted unanimously within the ILO by governments, employers, and workers in June 2012. That is recommendation number 202 on social protection floors. And social protection floors are a set of entitlements, child allowances, maternity benefits, unemployment benefits, disability allowances, healthcare, and old age pension that together ensure basic income security for all. It's not exactly a universal basic income because it is not the idea that people who are working and have an income from work be supported in addition by some additional basic income. That is normally the idea of the universal basic income, but it nevertheless goes very far in protecting people from the risks of life and ensuring that they can plan their lives in accordance with that guarantee that they will not be forgotten by governments in times of crisis.
Next September, at the opening of the UN General Assembly, when all heads of state converge to New York, you will present a report on the future of social protection. What are the main issues currently driving the topic? Could you comment on the platform economy, the gig economy, and the fact that many people who have the right to social services, who could have access to some benefits in developed countries, do not do so?
Indeed, the report will be a reality check on social protection. The reason is there's a huge gap between the legal coverage of social protection schemes, in other terms, whom in principle should be protected, and the effective coverage, in other terms, how effectively the social protection schemes work and reach people who need state support. Let me give three examples of this. First, we have a large part of the global workforce that is informal. 61% of the workers in the world, 2 billion workers, are informal workers who do not pay taxes, who do not contribute to social security schemes that are contributory, and who are, if you wish, below the radar of much social legislation. And those workers are particularly at risk in times of crisis or to lose their jobs and not to receive support from the state. So that's the first issue I would like to work on. Secondly, there's the issue of non-take-up of rights. Many people who in principle should benefit from certain allowances and social assistance programs actually do not benefit because they do not claim their rights. They are poorly informed about their rights. They may feel that they've been discriminated against and they perhaps experience shame or stigmatization if they claim their rights. And so the phenomenon of non-take-up of rights is one in which those particularly living in poverty are not actually benefiting from the schemes that should support them. And I would like to study why this happens and what can be done about this phenomenon. And thirdly, there are what you referred to, the new forms of employment, precarious employment in the gig economy, people who work part-time, people who work on zero-hour contracts, people who are nominally self-employed, but in fact under the dependence of some company. And we see, as a result of the development of non-standard forms of employment, a growth of the number of working poor, people who have a job, but who are not paid a decent wage, allowing them to have access to a decent standard of living. And so that's a third phenomenon I would like to explore, and how social protection can adapt itself to these new forms of work in this changing economy in which flexibilization of workers is putting them at risk in many cases.
Thank you very much, Professor De Schutter, Special Rapporteur for Extreme Poverty for the UN Human Rights Council.
My pleasure.